Let's get started. Our other committee members will join us. We'll call to order the House Committee on Land Use for Tuesday, March 17, 2009, and open a work session on House Bill 2229. Members of the committee, I would expect that this will be the second to the last work session on this bill. I want to hear some issues that have been raised by members of the task force, separately or in tandem with that, by the agency, as well as from some members of the committee and from testimony that we've heard as we've heard public comment on this bill. And I want to extend an invitation to members of the committee to bring forward, either from this discussion or in separate considerations, any other conceptual amendments or actual amendments, but I suggest conceptual because I would expect that we will make one amendment to this bill when we move it. Bring your ideas forward to me or to Ms. Ross or to Vice Chair Garrett, who's specifically been tasked to work on this bill. We'll have a discussion today about some ideas that will probably be recommended for action by the committee to be moved into the bill. I'd like to hear if there are other ideas that members would like to include within the bill or other amendment changes. And the next time we post the bill, it will be a signal to you that I think we're ready to move the bill forward, or at least for the committee to take action on the bill. With that background, I do know that the task force that originally recommended this legislation to us continued to meet after the final filing deadline for legislation and has some adjustments to the bill, some technical in nature, mostly technical in nature, that I'd like us to hear from Mr. Whitman of the department explaining to us the kinds of adjustments that they would recommend would improve the bill. Mr. Whitman?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Richard Whitman from the Department of Land Conservation and Development, here today to testify concerning Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2229. The Dash 2 amendments represent the last set of amendments coming from the Big Look Task Force itself at its meeting in mid-January. It had a final meeting and made a final set of relatively minor, in the scheme of things, amendments to the legislative concept that it submitted the end of November, actually. So what I'm going to do today is walk you through those technical amendments. The amendments include, in addition to the so-called technical amendments, some changes also to several areas of 2229 that are bigger policy issues. So those Dash 2 amendments include changes to the regional problem-solving provisions in the Big Look legislation. They also include changes to the so-called rural lands remapping provisions of House Bill 2229. I am not going to walk you through those particular amendments today. I'm going to walk you through the other amendments coming from the task force itself. As you know, the discussion about rural lands and the discussion about regional problem solving is a bigger discussion. So what I have handed out to the committee represents a hand-engrossed version of the Dash 2 amendments, but specifically only those amendments, again, dealing with other than the sort of big issue areas in 2229. So the first one of those appears on the second page. of the hand-engrossed amendments. And you'll see, I'll see after I put my reading glasses on. Okay. That the first change has to do with the so-called overarching principles for the land use system. You've heard testimony on this concept before. The idea is to have a set of a description of the outcomes that our land use system is trying to achieve. These amendments don't change what those principles are. They're still, you'll see on the bottom of page 1 and the top of page 2, the same four principles are there. But the task force was working with how those principles interact with the rest of the land use system in a legal way. They wanted to make sure that those principles did not provide a basis for additional litigation. There was a sense we have enough litigation in our land use system already, and that so these amendments are simply intended to clarify that in a legal sense, those overarching principles are not the basis for somebody to challenge a particular land use decision. So that's the first technical amendment, if you will. The second technical amendment has two parts to it. And the first appears on page 4 of your hand-engrossed bill in the form of a deletion. Section 4 of House Bill 2229 right now is introduced is an amendment to RS 197-628. And it, you'll see in subsection 2B there, it made the concentration, it called for the department to concentrate periodic review on the remapping of farm and forest lands. So the task force at its last, since counties do not do periodic review, in a technical sense, that doesn't really work. The task force instead moved the provision directing resources for remapping to the section of the statute that deals with grant funds. So you'll see that on page, and this is where our page numbering gets off, but on page 6 of the hand-engrossed bill, where you have that number 3, you'll see the new subsection 5 there, providing that the commission shall give priority in the allocation of grants and technical assistance for a periodic review to counties and cities that do that planning work. So that's the second piece. Okay. Then moving on to pages 6 and 7, I'm sorry, 7 and 8. Both deal with regional problem solving. Again, I'm not going to go into that today.
Or at least not yet.
Not yet. The next provision is on page 10. This is section 15 of the bill. And you'll see that the old section 15 is proposed to be replaced with a new section 15. It's similar, but has some important nuances in it. The first is that this section 15 used to be directed only at state agencies. This is a section providing for prioritization of expenditure of funds on infrastructure. And it used to be directed only at the Department of Transportation. The task force decided at its last meeting that should be broadened out to all state agencies and cities and counties. That's change number one. And then change number two is one that is important to those state agencies and cities and counties in that it says, within constraints demanded by applicable federal law, regulations, and state law and rules. The concept here is that infrastructure funding to support redevelopment, to support efficient patterns of urbanization, that prioritization be made, but that it not overrule existing frameworks for decision making and existing standards for decision making on how those funds are spent. So, for instance, for the Department of Transportation, which has criteria for the expenditure of transportation funds on highway improvements, this would not this would be a priority in addition to and to the extent not in conflict with their existing standards for expenditure of funds. That's the concept. Same goes for cities and counties. This is an area, a subject area that was important to the task force. I think you've heard other testimony, including from the counties, about the importance of our public infrastructure finance system and its interplay with the land use system. So this was an important provision for the Big Look Task Force. The language that you have in the Dash 2 amendments reflects also discussions between my department and the Department of Transportation concerning this concept and how it would work with their existing provisions for prioritizing transportation funding. There were a few changes to that section made by Legislative Council that we have not had a chance to fully discuss with the Department of Transportation. That still needs to be done. I'll just make that clear for the record. Otherwise, it does reflect the concept that the task force decided on in its meeting in January. So those are the, there are a few other grammatical stylistic changes, which I'm not going to go through, but those are the final set of amendments coming from the task force.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Whitman. Questions for Mr. Whitman? It's a bit to digest immediately. I'm sure Mr. Whitman will be back the next time we work the bill, too, if people need a little more time. But if there are immediate questions on any of these points.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Actually, I do have a question.
All right. Sorry. Representative Cowan.
It takes me a little while. That the last section that you just went through, section 15, talking about the infrastructure investment need. It begins in areas of the state that are growing rapidly. Is there any criteria for that determination in terms of what part of the state does this refer to and what does it not?
Chair Nolan, Representative Cowan, there is no set definition in statute of what areas of the state are growing rapidly. This is intended to give some discretion to the Department of Transportation and to the extent it involves the Department of Land Conservation and Development, potentially LCDC, to define that. And in the absence of that, some discretion to cities and counties to define that for themselves. The concept is that this issue of public finance of infrastructure is most critical, obviously, in areas that are growing rapidly, where the need for new infrastructure investment is the greatest. So there's no magic to this other than that. In the absence of any action by Department of Transportation or by LCDC or perhaps by the Department of Economic and Community Development, this would not really be self-executing. There would need to be some further decisions made by local government and by state agencies to really carry this out. It's, if you will, general policy direction.
While you're here, and since we've just had passed out, and you referenced it earlier, another part of this bill that I think has a lot of merit, both from the testimony we've heard and even from some of the discussion we've had, is to make more effective the regional problem-solving aspects of land use planning, and I know several of our members of the committee have talked to that. Representative Garrett has been working to try to consolidate some suggested changes to that with the department and with other stakeholders. And Mr. Whitman, just for your information, your notes have just arrived for us. So if you'd like to help walk us through the improvements that we're talking about for the regional problem solving.
Madam Chair, I'll...
Not line by line, but just...
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd be glad to walk you through. I won't walk you through line by line to the notes. I think the notes will be helpful background for people as they sit down and look at this more carefully. But let me give you sort of the concepts here again. Let me back up and first just briefly refresh everyone's memory about what regional problem solving is. Regional problem solving is a set of statutes that were put in place by the legislature back in the mid-1990s, and they authorize local governments to take planning actions that do not comply with LCDC rules. And that's intended to be an incentive. They don't have to comply with LCDC rules if they work as a region to resolve a particular regional planning problem. RPS has been used successfully in one or two places. It's been unsuccessful in at least one major instance, and it is on the cusp of succeeding in southern Oregon right now in the Bear Creek area.
After 9 years.
After 9 years. That's correct, Representative Greenlick. Actually, Chair Nolan, Representative Greenlick, it's even longer than 9 years because the Bear Creek effort actually precedes the adoption of the regional problem-solving statutes. They were working as a region to try to address those issues back in the early 1990s. They've been at it a long time.
The law could have sunsetted before they came to a conclusion.
So the way this works generally is that, again, local governments do not have to comply with LCDC rules if they're working together as a region. And what that means is they have to agree unanimously on what the regional plan is and what land use planning actions will be taken to implement that plan. And where we've had a failure in Polk County, we had a local government pull out of that process toward the end of it. So the unanimity is a tough issue. There was a lot of discussion in the Big Look Task Force about whether to continue that requirement. There's been ongoing discussion among stakeholders on that issue. The task force felt, and I think many stakeholders feel, unanimity is still a good idea. But we need a process that is much more streamlined, works much quicker, and is much more carefully focused on a particular problem and a particular outcome. So the changes that we are working on would change regional problem solving to create a two-step process. The first step would be definition of what the regional problem is and what local governments are necessary participants in that process, who must take actions to actually implement the plan. The scoping of the problem and the participants would come to LCDC at a first stage for approval. The purpose of that review would be to make sure that it's in a, the problem is defined in a way and the participants are defined in a way that makes sense and that is doable. The government, local governments would be given a period of time to actually then go forth and complete the plan and adopt it. That time, according to the provisions here, would be, I believe it's 3 years. With a one-year check-in provision. So the thought is, again, by more carefully defining the problem, by more carefully setting who has to participate up front, you would then avoid some of the problems we've been having with regional problem solving in the past couple of years. That's okay. Those are the main parts of it. There's, yeah.
That's a question.
Thanks. Questions on that part? Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Whitman, who is we? You keep referring that we are doing this or we are doing that. Who is we? And the second part of the question is on this regional problem solving. How many people did you include from Southern Oregon that is involved in this process today?
Chair Nolan, Representative Esquivel, we've been meeting with staff and representatives of counties to discuss some of these concepts at a large-scale level. So that's the we in terms of who's been working on this. As you may know, I have been, we have asked representatives of the Bear Creek RPS effort to give input to the department on regional problem solving, and that was done during the Big Look process and even right at the end of the Big Look process. Frankly, we haven't had a lot of specific input from the RPS policy committee on this issue, but we asked for input from them. We'd be more than happy to hear input from them.
Follow-up, ma'am.
Follow-up, yes, Representative.
So you have initiated and spoke to these people as of recently?
Madam Chair, Representative Esquivel, I've been in contact with the chair of the RPS policy committee within the last couple of weeks.
In the county and the cities?
Madam Chair, Representative Esquivel, I have not been in direct communication with Jackson County or the cities or, well, with one city I've been in contact in the last couple of weeks, but not all the cities.
What city is that?
The city of Ashland.
But, Mr. Whitman, you've been working with representatives of the counties generally.
That's correct, Chair Nolan.
Okay. Anything else on regional problem solving? Thanks, Mr. Whitman. Two more aspects of the bill that we are actively working on that I wanted, three, that I wanted the committee to be aware of. One is the recommendation from the task force around the complexity of land use law and potential contradictions or gaps or conflicts in the law and how we might streamline that. And I think we've talked global, kind of macro level about how we are proposing to approach that, but perhaps, Representative Garrett, you could talk about some of the ideas we're looking at to address the complexity and give clarity to people who are applying for land use permits through the system and the interested parties in the process.
Well, Madam Chair, one of the recommendations of the task force was to appoint a group to do a policy-neutral audit and review of the code and the rules, and we've discussed that in work session previously. We are exploring the question that remains open is which is the best group to perform that task, and we are exploring an option of having the Oregon Law Commission, which exists for the purpose of taking requests from the legislature at lower form and doing an audit of the system. We're still in the process of talking with them about the feasibility of that. Obviously, it's a long-term project. It would come at some expense, and we'll need to spend some additional time figuring out the scope of it and how much it would cost.
And that's a resource. The Law Commission actually does this kind of thing in other settings. A neutral party that identifies issues and helps recommend clarifying adjustments. I don't think we would want to do that absent involvement from the department because of the expertise that the department has, or absent involvement from LC because they also bring a certain expertise to this. But perhaps they could identify things that from a more objective or the perspective of someone who isn't up to their elbows in this all the time might be able to assist in bringing those points out. Fourth item that we're looking at is around economic incentives. The task force had recommended finding some economic incentives to implement some of the land use goals, and Representative Clem, I know you worked on a work group and have some ideas on how we might address that.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, I didn't realize that simultaneously to a work group convened by the House Interim Agriculture Committee, there actually is in Section 14 a reference to within regional problem solving, authorizing transfer of development rights. What we did in the work group was actually look at it not just within regional problem solving, but period, across the board, across the state, all jurisdictions, state agencies, local governments, even potentially private partners. And the work group was rather large, chaired by Representative Roblin, and then former Representative Boquist and I were the vice chairs of the committee, so we sat on it, along with representatives from home builders, realtors, Thousand Friends, Nature Conservancy, Forest Capital, a lot of other people. And we eventually, I think, came up with some concepts that we could agree to that do help add on top of, I think, the recommendation or the language in the Big Look. Some of the early reports were, other than zoning, let's figure out some other way to have value and incentives on top of just zoning for particularly rural landowners. And this is a way to answer that, to say, you know, we figure out what development options and rights you might have under minimum acreage law or other law, and then figure out a way to, on a voluntary basis, say this is worth this amount of money or these amount of credits, and then somebody else over here who has a value that they feel is there voluntarily says, yeah, we'd like to buy those. And so that farmer or that forest landowner gets those credits, and then they leave that area, are sent over to a place where then they get to do something they otherwise probably wouldn't have got to be able to do. And this is it. This is land use planning in some states. It's largely what it entirely exists of, and I think our work group felt there is a place for that here in Oregon as well.
Okay. Mr. Whitman, did you have comments on that idea? I also know that there's at least one member of that work group in the audience if we wanted to talk with them about how this might play out. Mr. Cleave, can you also come forward?
And this just so we can acknowledge it, Ms. Daniels, she is an expert. She's done it in several states.
Oh.
So she's very helpful.
That's right.
Maybe she should be sitting at the dais.
Well, Madam Chair,
at the table instead.
For the record, Richard Whitman, Department of Land Conservation and Development. I do have Catherine Daniels, who is the Farm Forest Specialist at the Department of Land Conservation and Development. She does have extensive experience with implementing transfer development right and purchase of development right programs in other states. Frankly, that was part of the reason we were interested in getting her into the department, because we are seriously looking at non-regulatory tools to help with our land use program. And as Representative Clem indicated, the Big Look Task Force was aware of the work that the department was doing on this, and there was quite a bit of discussion in the task force about transfer development rights as a complementary tool to our regulatory system to provide economic incentives to property owners to do some of the things we want to see happen out there on the ground. In addition to Section 14 of the bill and the regional problem solving, there is another section in House Bill 2229, and I'm not going to be able to quote it for you right now, but there is another section dealing with essentially substandard size lots on resource lands. It's in the resource land provisions, and again, it's a proposal from the task force that there be an authorization to put in place a transfer of development right program to take those platted, undeveloped lots that exist out there on the rural landscape. Many of these are going to be in forest land. And think about moving the potential development that could occur on those lands into development patterns that make more sense. So that authority, that proposal for that authority was in, is in House Bill 2229.
And Madam Chair, just to be clear,
Senator Clem,
that's the person who owns the rights to that voluntarily deciding to have that move, not we, the agency.
Chair Nolan, Representative Clem, that's right. This would be a voluntary program that people, willing seller type of situation. And I should say, if you do have any technical questions about transfer of development rights or any of the proposals in the various pieces of legislation, Catherine Daniels can certainly do a more able job than I am in describing them.
Okay. Madam Chair, thank you for the invitation. For the record, Sean Cleave, Oregon Farm Bureau. Yes, I did participate in Representative Clem, Rep. Boquist, and Roblin's committee. There's actually two concepts that we had discussed in that committee. The first one was regarding a way to fund conservation easements that was fairly rapidly extinguished in the group. But the TDR conversation was something that piqued everybody's interest fairly equally, not to say that there weren't some issues that were discussed about how you set the TDR program up and how you incentivize receiving areas, but it was an issue that was of broad interest. It's an issue that the Farm Bureau would support moving forward with.
Okay. Questions for this panel or for Ms. Daniels? As we develop a more specific language, I suspect there might be more questions about it. So thanks. And the last piece is the one that has continued to confound us about this bill, and that is the classification of rural lands. And we know that there's pretty strong consensus not in favor of the specific way of addressing this that the task force came up with, but I think there's also pretty broad interest in finding some way of addressing the issue of classification of rural lands. So I am inviting ideas on that one. I really don't have them. But we're continuing to try to work with interest groups, including counties, cities, developers, Oregonians in Action, Thousand Friends, to try to identify how we might address that. But we don't yet have the answer. If members of the committee have suggestions or that, love to talk about them now.
Madam Chair.
Representative Winger.
I'm going to go back to a point I made earlier in our discussions about whether or not there are irreconcilable issues in this concept. So I guess I would ask the question, is the purpose to protect high-value farmland and forest land or to stop growth? Because the answer to that question is important. If it's to protect high-value farmland and forest land, then there's a compromise. There is a road, a middle road that can be reached. You can find a way to protect those and allow development on other lands in rural areas. If, however, the objective is to prohibit growth, which some of us have come to believe the system is designed to do, then this is just an exercise in futility, because ultimately the laws serve to accomplish that goal for some folks within the state, and I don't see any inclination to, why would you give it, if that's your objective, why would you give it up? And anything we would do that would allow the use of rural land would seem to defeat that goal.
Representative Greenlee.
Yeah, I was wondering if, I mean, the world is usually not quite so black and white as that. And part of the issue might be there are people who want to manage growth in a way that meets some external objectives. And those same people probably want to protect high-value farmland. It seems to me, if there are two worlds, they both might want to get into this game in terms of how to classify land in a way that maybe sub-optimizes both of their objectives. But
let me, Representative Greenlee, let me rephrase my statement. There are two categories. There are three, and I'm not so much concerned about those who don't even want to preserve high-value farmland and forest land. But let me suggest that. Yes, it is possible to want to protect high-value farmland, forest land, and to control growth. But I also think that there is a considerable element in our state that that wants to preserve high-value farmland and forest land, but also wants to prevent growth, not manage it, prevent it.
Growth in
development
areas.
Yes, and so I agree with you. If you're sitting down at the table to negotiate with people who ultimately just want to manage growth and aren't just using that as a word to hide the fact that they want to stop growth, then yes, you can reach a compromise.
Representative, we're veering a little close to imputing motives on other people, and I think we're edging onto some dangerous territory there. I'm happy to entertain your discussions about what you would like to propose.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't think I was impugning anybody's specific motives, or at least no one at this dais, but I think that if we can't have an honest conversation about what the objectives are, then we can't really reach a compromise.
And what I've invited is for you to suggest your objectives, and you and all other members of the committee, and make specific proposals that would achieve them. And I'd welcome those either today or over the next couple of weeks as we prepare amendments for this bill.
Madam Chair, can I ask a question?
You may, Representative.
It seems to me in the specifics of the way 229 is phrased, it isn't about protecting high-value farmland or not. It's about finding a way to reclassify lands that, for one reason or another, people feel may be misclassified. And so probably what we're groping for here, and a way was proposed, you get two counties together, they do something, or in the dash two amendments, it's a little different than that, I think. But are we trying to find a way to deal with misclassified land?
Yes, we're missing all this
wasn't that
commentary for his...
For the record.
For history, yes.
Should I try and recreate it for history?
We want that word to be well here.
Moving forward, let's make sure that we capture it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And so it seems to me it's how do we deal with the situation where somebody or another feels the classification is incorrect? I mean, that seems to me a little simpler construct than the larger issue. And then we need to ask what are the blocks to it. And I don't know that I really have an answer, but we need to ask what are the blocks to changing misclassified land, or I wouldn't even say misclassified land. Land, there are people who think it is misclassified, and I think we got to some of them before, that the blocks seem to be tied up with the question of the complexity of the laws. And that if we simplify the laws, we may accidentally make this situation a little easier.
And the task force testified and reported in its findings that it thinks that there are obstacles to making those changes. Representative Winger appropriately raises the question of whether that is something that the committee as a whole wants to make some changes to. But then the secondary question is, if you answer that in the affirmative, how do you go about doing that? And it does depend on what your objectives are. But first you have to ask the question of whether the committee is convinced that the current situation creates an obstacle that should be removed. Representative Clem.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. On this issue, if you recall, in the beginning, I at least was fairly perplexed about what was broken with the existing system. And I think I'm starting to understand what's broken with the existing system. And it's on both sides of the equation, probably, depending on whether you're the person who feels your property is miszoned or the person who's your neighbor who, maybe if it is miszoned, is worried about, you know, what happens in the outcome of that proceeding, because you all have lawyers, I've noticed. And so I think a lot of it actually comes down to, yeah, no offense, I think it comes down to the cost and uncertainty of engaging in the current process, which is to apply for redesignation to non-resource land. That's the current process. I don't think I could support actually having anyone, me or a county or anything else, try and say what a good tiny definition of ag land is in my area versus other lands. It should be a common definition. But if your property doesn't fit that definition, it should be done on soil types and historical usage, and then if it doesn't fit it, it doesn't fit it. So then the question is, what's broken with the current situation? I think part of it is
people who have miszoned land usually don't care until they want to develop it. You know, I said before, I own a piece. It's clearly miszoned. It's called EFU grazing. It's an acre in the middle of the woods. There's just no way that's what it should be. But I don't care because I'm not trying to develop anything. It's got a house on it. If I wanted to break it up, I'd care a lot. Then I'd start applying to get it rezoned, and then I would have to hire a lawyer, and then my neighbors would hire a lawyer, and on and on. So is there a process that could help reduce that cost that would put, you know, the lay person in front of other lay people, like putting it in front of the commission on a limited basis, some number that they can just go and make their case? Now, on the flip side, you got to have, if you're going to use soil science, it can't just be one of these, everyone goes and gets their own expert. I think you have to have somebody who the Department of Agriculture says, this is a real soil scientist, and they keep a list. That's who decides what the soil classification looks like. Then I think, if it's true, it's definitely not good farm soil, and you didn't have to spend a ton in lawyers to do that, and you had to pick a neutral party to sort of decide whether it is, and then you've got a bunch of citizen commissioners sitting there listening for just logic, not legal arguments, then I think you take Robert Liberty's example and say, well, what are the actual, though, full costs of if you do that? As we in Ag Committee are hearing about all these stranded developments where somebody is going to have to subsidize putting in landline telephones into these things because they signed an exclusive agreement, and then the phone company they had originally intended to service this development is gone. So now some little rural telephone co-op is going to have to spread it out over their user base to go lay landlines. So there is a cost to just taking your miszoned piece of property and turning it into a subdivision, because someone's got to extend it and firefighters have to cover it. So I think the full cost of what it costs to get out there should be part of that equation, which is, yeah, it's miszoned, but what next? And then finally, I think the sideboards on, and this is, I think, to represent Winger's point, I do think that I have a very strong interest in protecting farmland. I have a stronger interest in protecting farmers' ability to stay in business. So then it comes down to what happens with the one piece of misdesignated land that's the one person who doesn't care about the right to farm laws and comes down here and tries to get bills sponsored to put us out of business because they don't like the fact that we spray pesticides, or they decide that it's important to go and shut our equipment off in the middle of the night because it's making noise to scare the birds away so they don't ruin our crop. It's illegal, but they do it anyway. So most farmers will talk to you about how frustrating it is to have residential uses right near farming operations. And it's the same reason to be concerned about their taxes and everything else for farmers. It's not just environmental issues. It's, you know, farmers need to be able to stay in business, and part of that is not having conflicting uses, you know, right next to each other causing conflict. So that's my little rant.
Good job.
And it's helpful, but it points out, the discussion we've just had points out why this is such a difficult thing to resolve and to come to a language you can actually put in a statute to specify a path. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I think my colleague brings up some pretty good points there. One is that as for the lines and the telephone thing, mm-hmm. I'm surprised that anyone with half a brain would not have a performance bond backing up anything they do in that nature. I mean, I know I would. That's just good business. I'm sorry that they did not do that, but I would have definitely required a performance bond that they did perform, and if they didn't, then there'd be money enough left over to take care of it. The second thing is this, you're talking about people that do soil. That's intriguing, because you could have a classification of people similar to an appraiser, where they are neutral, they are on a list, they are rotated, and it is an unbiased, don't have a dog in the fight type appraiser that would take this soil and more or less give you a determination. I think that has some very big value to it. The sad part about this is, Representative, is that I know I can take you to places in my region that I know everyone knows they're miszoned, because my county went and broad brush approach to all zoning in Jackson County in order to comply with LCDC back in the 70s with disregard to what was actually there. Why would that have to cost the landowner a bunch of money to get there is beyond my comprehension. It was a government foul-up. It was a government entity that caused the problem, but yet today It costs them thousands and thousands of dollars, and if we're talking about a soil appraiser, who's going to pay for that? It certainly wasn't the people that owned the property, because our county was overreacting. So we have some real dilemmas to work on, and I think what we need to work on as well is fairness. Fairness to the people that do have agricultural land, that do want to remain farmers. I would like to see municipalities adopt a 200-foot buffer zone to all agricultural lands. Gee, if you're 200 feet away from it, you can't build a house within 200 feet of it. That gives you quite a buffer zone. That way, you don't have to worry about the spray. You don't have to worry about the 2 o'clock in the morning when the fans kick on to save your crops. So
the bill was, you know, 5 miles. It was a 5 mile ban around everything.
Like, three, I think you have some very valid points,
sorry,
Representative. I really do.
Okay. Any Representative Cowan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is not an easy issue to get to a solution on, and I wrestled with it for a long time. If I had a proposal, I'd have brought it forward. But to add to the complexity, I think many of the points that have been made are valid. I also think that this state is not a one-size-fits-all, and we need to take into consideration some of the differences across the state. And if we try to define too narrowly some definitions, they may not apply well to all parts. We have some far more rural areas that designs that work for the greater Willamette Valley, and some of the high-value farmland don't work as well in other places, where if they do have water, they may very well farm successfully. The soil types may not be the same, but there may be conflicting uses that are really not in that big a conflict, that limited, and I'm not talking about development, I'm talking about limited homes being placed in rural areas where you don't always find the conflicts that have been described very well. But unfortunately, those areas where we do end up with a conflict between existing uses, be that agricultural or timberland, and individuals who choose to live in that area and then don't appreciate the conflicts with the pursuit of that, those are the ones that we hear about. And I'm just not sure that we will ever get to one definition that's going to work across the state. Sorry.
We may put that to the test in the next few weeks to see whether we can. Are there other issues that members want to put forward with respect to recommendations from the Big Look that you would like us to be working with LCN?
Well, we don't even work, but I do want to remind the Chair that several of us are concerned with the issue that's taken care of in the Dash 1 amendments.
Yep. Thanks.
Keep that.
Yep. All right. Anything else? Leave this as an open invitation to committee members. Representative Garrett is the point person on the committee for this, although I'm certainly interested as well, and Ms. Ross is staffing our efforts on this. So let us know. We will be. We will advise you when we think we're getting close to the point of having an amendment ready to move forward, and we'll post it with plenty of time for you to absorb it and weigh in on it. Any other further business?
Madam Chair?
Representative Winger.
I just want to go back to a point I made earlier when we were talking about this bill, that I thought Principle D should be changed to read, provide fairness to Oregon landowners. I wasn't sure, but I thought I heard some growing agreement on the committee for changing that language. Seemed to be some openness to it. I think it gives the principals a little bit more meat. I realize there's some amendments coming to make it clear that they have no legal effect, but I think, if I go back to my point, that I think that right now those principles really don't add a lot, but I think by making that change to D, We are adding something to discussion. We are kind of getting at some of the source of frustration is, even if the principles don't actually have any legally binding effect.
Okay, thank you. Before I close, there was a little bit of testimony we should put on the record. And Ms. Ross, I thought you gave me a list that... Okay, here we go. Vice Chair Garrett.
Madam Chair, we have received written testimony to acknowledge for the record on House Bill 2229 from Evan McKenzie of Umatilla County and Paula Hurd from the League of Women Voters.
Okay. And those have been distributed to committee members and are part of our record now. With that, I will close our work session on House Bill 2229, and we are adjourned for the day.
Hallelujah.